That ticking reminds me that I'm late for a very important date, which means it's time to slip down the rabbit hole and into a world of Russian timepieces.
This is Peterhof, one of Emperor Peter the Great's exquisite creations, showcasing luxury palaces, cascade fountains, and spectacular parklands. But few people know that it's also home to one of Russia's oldest watchmaking factories. David Henderson Stewart has been at the helm of this enterprise for more than a decade, and I'm going to ask him what makes Russian watchmaking tick.
So, David, I have to, I guess, start with an esoteric question. Philosophers and scientists, they really cannot decide on what time is. One theory is that time was created by humans so that we could deal with our uncertainty. What is time to you, and what are clocks to you?
Well, time for me is one of the most important things in the world. I mean, with all the money in the world, you cannot buy an additional second. You know, each of us is absolutely equal in front of time. And, you know, when you look at the history of our ancestors, time was sacred. Time was given by sky. They looked at the sun, at the stars, at the moon. So it came kind of, for them, it came from God. Mm-hmm. So time was sacred. So I kind of have the same feeling towards time as something that's very precious and definitely one of the most important things that we have in the world, assets that we have in the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you started here at Rakieta, you really didn't know anything about watches. Now you're pretty much an expert. So what makes a Rakieta watch stand out to you from a technical point of view?
Well, Rakieta is much more than the watch. Rakieta is a history. Rakieta is a brand that's intimately linked to Russian culture, mm-hmm. Russian history. And it's also the result of an incredible know-how that is kept in under this roof, mm-hmm. which otherwise would have disappeared, because you can always buy the machines in Switzerland, mm-hmm. but the know-how is absolutely incredible. These people do incredible things with their hands, mm-hmm. and the result is a watch without any batteries, chips, electronic, that should always give the right time. It's just metal parts that interact. And every single day, week, month, year, gives you the time. Mm-hmm. It's something that's quite incredible.
Now, I've heard of an acoustic signature, and I've heard that a Rakieta watch has its own unique acoustic signature. What exactly is that, and why is Rakieta so unique?
Well, watches are not just watches move, the hands move around the dial, and watches make a sound also. Mm. So a watch is very much like a living person. Mm-hmm. It has a history. The watchmaker gives life to the watch, and the watch that you wear on your wrist measures your time, mm-hmm. and it gives a sound. And the sound is unique because the watch is made with Russian metal, mm-hmm. The watch also has its own construction. So the sound, I mean, it's difficult for me to describe the sound, but I know it's unique. It doesn't sound like the sound of a Swiss watch.
Okay, what about jewels and watches? When I think of jewels, I think of something that is decorative, but jewels for a watch are much more important. Can you talk to me a little bit about what a jeweled watch means?
Yeah, of course. Every single watch, Swiss watches, Russian watches, have mm-hmm. jewels in the mechanical movements. I have on my wrist 24 jewels. Mm-hmm. Now, jewels are not just beautiful gems. Mm-hmm. Jewels are also serve a very important function. You should imagine, like in the gate train, there are lots of wheels with axes, mm-hmm. and each axe rotates around its pivot, like mm-hmm. sometimes 100,000 times a day. And if it were metal against metal, it would very significantly wear out. Mm-hmm. So at the tip of every axe, you have a jewel. So a ruby against metal doesn't wear out at all. Mm-hmm. So it serves a very important function.
Okay, that's very cool. Something that I did not know. Thank you for that.
Very few people know that. A lot of people think like you, it's just for decoration, but it's not.
Right, it actually has its own function.
It's very, very important.
Now, what about... what you do here is more than business. You say that it is akin to, cultural values. In fact, I've heard in an interview that you said that what you do here is kind of like the Bolshoi Theater. Can you explain that? What do you mean by that?
I mean, everyone thinks it's a business. It's not a business. Mm-hmm. A business is something which is aimed to make money. Rakieta is so much more than that. You should imagine Rakieta as a factory that has existed for more than 300 years. It was founded by the Emperor Peter the Great. Mm-hmm. And it tells the stories of all the incredible achievements of the Soviet and the Russian people, mm-hmm. the conquest of space, Russian avant-garde art, and so on and so on. And a watch in itself doesn't... Few people buy watches to read the time now. People mm-hmm. buy watches because they get emotions from the watch. Mm-hmm. And the emotion comes from the mechanical movement, which is unique, which is the result of an incredible know-how, the story that the watch tells, the design, and all of this is tremendously incredible. And look, my watch is a result of more than 8,000 operations. Mm-hmm. You need more than 80 specialists to do this. I mean, it's not. It's the purpose of all of this is not to make money. Mm-hmm. I would have been much, much richer if I started, you know, an IT company or internet company or whatever. Mm-hmm. This is about something much bigger than that.
Alexander Brodnikovsky has been collecting timepieces for half a century and now owns more than 6,000 clocks and watches from different places and epochs, more than any known private collector in the world.
How did you get started? What does collecting watches mean to you? Is it about preserving history? Is it about the fascination with time? What does this collection mean to you?
I'm 64 years old, you know. Some people say Soviet watches are worthless and boring. They're wrong. We need to preserve our history, which I'm trying to do. Young people have no idea about Soviet watches, which were actually amazing. What I've been collecting is a history of watches. At first, I collected antique timepieces before switching to Soviet-made ones. It's a fascinating subject. I'm a member of a collector's club, and one man, many years ago, wrote to me saying it's better to own 10 Breguet watches than a bucket full of Soviet mass-produced junk. He just had no clue about Soviet watches. What I want to do is help the next generation appreciate the beauty of Soviet watches. This history is the legacy I want to leave behind.
So you've mentioned you have more than 6,000 watches. It's an impressive collection. And of these thousands, what are some of the most rare or the most valuable that you have?
The most rare and valuable ones are these. These watches have zodiac signs on the dials. Here you have Cancer and so on. Each zodiac sign has its own gemstone. This timepiece is also interesting. If you look at it like this, you can see it has a holographic crystal. Here's another remarkable piece. It's a diving watch from a factory museum. This watch here has a unique movement, which was never mass-produced. It was destroyed as soon as it was made. These are the rarest watches I have.
I guess my final question is, how much is this all worth? Have you ever had your entire collection appraised? How much is it all valued at?
You know, this collection is priceless. I don't even know how much it could be worth, because it's so unique. But it would be a lot of money. There's a lot of work that has gone into this collection, and you can't find such timepieces today. They don't exist anymore. There was a woman who called me twice, offering me 50 million for the collection. I would remain its guardian, but I would no longer be the owner. It was a non-starter for me. I'm 64, and I've been doing this my whole life. I just can't sell it to anyone. It's my life. I don't want to change it. I like collecting watches. I enjoy the excitement, and I'm really committed to seeing this through. My goal is to have the biggest collection, period. That's what I want. Money doesn't have the same appeal to me. What I enjoy more is being able to tell people about my watches. I want people to know that our country made all these wonderful things.
What are qualities that you look for in a watchmaker? What does one need to have in order to be like an exclusive Rakete quality watchmaker?
I would say the biggest quality that a watchmaker's have is passion. Mm-hmm. Before discovering Rakete, I was a lawyer, I was a banker. I never saw so much passion in the profession as mm-hmm. watchmakers. For them, it's much more than the job. It's a passion of, for life. Mm-hmm. And when you're passionate about watchmaking, then all the other qualities flow in automatically, the precision and all of that. Mm-hmm. So really, I would say passion.
And what about
you? You cannot be a good watchmaker if you're not passionate about making watches.
I would say that that's true all the way through, I guess. What about you personally? What have you learned from watchmaking? You say that you were a lawyer and a banker. Coming here, what have you learned about life in general?
Well, first of all, I've discovered two things. First of all, I've discovered the world of time, mm-hmm. like we talked about it a bit earlier on. Mm-hmm. I also discovered how, we come from a world, the Western world, where mm-hmm. We value, people who succeed in life by being bankers and lawyers and all of that. And I discovered in this factory how incredible these workers are. When I say workers, it's craftsmen, people doing things with their hands. Mm-hmm. Their job is so much more difficult than even being a banker. Mm-hmm. To become a good watchmaker, it takes you at least 5 to 6 years. And that was a huge challenge because there are no more watchmaking schools in Russia anymore. So when we hire young people, we created our own watchmaking school and we trained them. And it takes us 5 to 6 years to make good specialists out of them. So mm-hmm. I have a tremendous respect now for these workers who work with their hands because they do absolutely incredible things.
Some timepieces can be spotted on the wrists of the world's rich and mighty. Take Konstantin Chaikin, whose watchmaking is recognized by connoisseurs as some of the most creative and original. We can find out what's quite literally behind the face of it.
Konstantin, thanks for taking the time to speak with us and show us some of your work. Now, I see some sketches out here, which fascinates me. I understand that before you start any project, you start with a sketch. And in a time when we have AI and computer enhancements, why with a sketch? Are you an analog person, per se?
There are many watchmakers and designers who rely on modern 3D modeling tools. Some, as you said, use AI. What I want, though, is for my creativity to come from the heart, as it were. I need this direct link between my fingertips and my brain. When I transfer my idea onto a notepad or canvas, that's a must for me. That, personally, is the quickest way to sketch a new watch.
Now, the outside design, the ornaments, are one thing, but the inside of the watches, the mechanism itself, do those change from watch to watch or timepiece to timepiece, or is it all the same inside?
When we describe a watch movement, we talk about its architecture. When we look at different buildings and their architectural styles, we certainly see some functional elements, like the foundation, the posts in the ground, the walls, the windows, and so on. A watch movement is a very functional mechanism as well. However, functional elements are also meant to have aesthetic value, even though some of the parts will never be seen by anyone except a watchmaker, who'll service or repair the watch later.
You're working with so many tiny parts to create the mechanism on such a small, small scale, very delicate work. How do you get such craftsmanship, the mathematics correct, the parts correct? Some of them you're manufacturing yourself, I'm sure. How does that all work together? How do you do that here?
Sometimes this kind of craftsmanship is described as jewelry grade. In fact, some watchmakers consider it almost an insult. The precision you need for making jewelry is orders of magnitude lower than what's required for mechanical watches. As for your question, we certainly need special measurement instruments because the tolerances in making a part depend on the precision of our measurements. We have these instruments as well as specialized machines, which allow us to manufacture high-precision parts to a tolerance of several microns or several thousandths of a millimeter.
Now, you have said that you have made the most complex timepiece in Russia. What do you mean by that? Is it complexity in number of parts? Is it the intricacy of movement? What is the most complex timepiece in Russia?
I've created both the most complicated table clock in Russia and, more recently, the most complicated watch in Russia as well. Yes, one criterion is the number of parts in the movement. For example, the Moscow Computers clock has 2,506 parts in the movement alone. The wristwatch I mentioned has 664 parts. But complexity is also determined by the number of functions or complications. So you have the number of parts, the number of functions it can perform, also probably the number of new inventions in the timepiece and the background. Then there's the time, which is the most precious thing we have, that went into the crafting of a masterpiece.
Okay, now you've also created the first tourbillon clock or timepiece in Russia. What exactly is that? Am I correct in understanding that it helps with the accuracy? What is a tourbillon timepiece?
20 years ago, I set myself the goal of creating the first ever tourbillon in Russia, in a table clock. That unusual goal was a challenge I decided to take upon myself. The tourbillon is a mechanism invented by the Swiss watchmaker Abraham Louis Breguet 200 years ago, with the purpose of countering the effect of gravity on the accuracy of a timepiece. The laws of physics haven't changed much over the last 200 years. One of the key components of a timepiece that ensures its accuracy is the balance wheel, whose axis must coincide with its center of mass. Even now, in the 21st century, we can't make it exactly so. Therefore, the job of a tourbillon is to average out gravitational error and provide accurate timekeeping. It works well in portable timepieces and is a great solution.
Some of your designs are fantastic, with extravagant ideas. I'm thinking of the timepiece that calculates the time on Mars, as well as a timepiece that calculates Russian Orthodox Easter. I guess I have to ask maybe the most obvious question. Who's the clientele for this type of watch? Why would someone want this type of a watch?
My role here is primarily that of an artist. To me, art knows no limits. There's classical art, like drawing or making sculptures, and what I do is technical art. Working on extremely complicated mechanisms which calculate the distance between Earth and Mars, or time on Mars, or the date of Orthodox Easter. Obviously, these have no practical sense these days. It's more of an artistic challenge for me. Talking about mechanical watches in general, today we're swamped with information and can check the time not necessarily on a wristwatch, but on a mobile phone and so on. You could say that the mechanical watch has essentially outlived its usefulness, because there are just so many other convenient devices that can tell you the time. So my work is primarily a creative process for me. However, first, we do have our own space program. I'm certain that watches that show the time on Mars will eventually be used by cosmonauts or astronauts who will set foot on the red planet in the distant or not too distant future. They'll want to know what time it is. Secondly, our watches have been and still are being used on the International Space Station. They are among the very few timepieces that have been worn under a spacesuit by cosmonauts during spacewalks. So there are a couple of specific examples of serious practical use.
Now, Constantine, let's talk about the Orthodox Easter timepiece, because I've tried to calculate it with Sasha, my editor. It's very difficult. It's incredibly complex in terms of doing that. How do you go about creating something and a mechanism for something so complex?
Indeed. The rules for setting the date of Orthodox Easter were formulated in the middle of the first millennium AD. It was defined as the first Sunday following the first full moon after Passover. Many different algorithms for determining the date were proposed over the next 1,500 years. But I've taken it a step further. I came up with my own mathematical formula based on those algorithms, which then helped me to build a mechanical watch module. I've done that twice, by the way. Once for a model with optical indication released in 2005, my first watch for Orthodox Easter, and later for a different mechanism, which uses a hand to indicate the right date. And I'm proud to say that few watchmakers do innovative maths, apart from classical mathematical calculations to help them invent new modules and calendars.
Now, I have to say, at the time of my research, you had 94 patents already. You're an artist. You're an engineer. You have to be all of these things. What is your next big dream project, I guess?
I'm happy to say that we just got our 95th patent, and I hope we'll reach 100 patents soon enough. You know, at some point I began to see my work as a challenge, trying to do something nobody else is doing and setting apparently unachievable goals. I'm not going to divulge any secrets, but we do have quite a few very ambitious projects in the pipeline. You can trace this trajectory looking at some of our previous achievements, our track record of unusual and complicated watches, some of them related to space exploration or other challenges, some not very practical, others quite practical. Not necessarily needed today or next year, but maybe very handy in future years.
What about your work that brings you joy and brings you pride? What do you like most about what you do?
Unlike other forms of art, watchmaking is very complex. It takes a long time to create a watch. It's true. It can be months and often years. The movement of this clock here took me about 5 years to build. Some of my latest complicated wristwatches required 2 years and more. Add to that the inventions I had created before which went into those models, and you could easily say those watches were 10 years in the making. It's a lengthy process. What brings me joy is the birth of a new timepiece. It's great to have a new idea. It's nice to sketch something beautiful. But when, having invested several years into a timepiece, you see it born at last. As a mechanical device, it has a life of its own. At this moment, you're overwhelmed with joy.
Kind of back to the esoteric a little bit. I'm an American, you're British, but I've heard you talk about the Russian soul is important in what you do here. But I've also heard from Russians that there's no possible way that a foreigner could really fully understand the Russian soul. So talk to me about the Russian soul and the Raketa watch. How is it implemented?
Well, first of all, I kind of disagree because when you look at the history of Russia, starting with Peter the Great and then afterwards, a lot of foreigners have come to Russia, like a lot. So foreigners have had a significant impact in the development of Russia over time. The Russian soul for me, well, I discovered the Russian soul by reading Dostoevsky when I lived in England. It's for me was kind of people with very tormented, deep, contradictory feelings, which was very different from what I knew in England, because English people are not like that. And we are taught to hide our feelings and not to have any feelings, you know. Everyone knows the expression, the stiff upper lip. It means that, you know, when people feel danger, usually their upper lip starts moving. Well, we are taught never to show our feelings. So that was very different from what I knew. And I was interested by that. And that's what the Russian soul is for me. I mean, it goes, all goes back to Dostoevsky. I've read a lot of Dostoevsky, like many, many people. And he describes very well this very deep, complicated Russian soul.
You've also said that watchmaking in general would be boring without Russians. So what do Russians bring in? What does Russia bring to the table in the realm of watchmaking?
Do you know, I'm not the one who said that. This is something that is is said to me every time I go to, we participate in big prestigious watch exhibitions in Geneva, for example. We have all of these, you know, journalists and watchmaking experts who come to me and said, thank God you do exist, because otherwise the world of watchmaking would be much more boring if there were only Swiss watches. What we bring is a different construction of the movement. I mean, our Russian movement looks like a Swiss movement, but it's constructed completely differently. Another kind of design. Watches tell a very different history or story. So Russian watches are very different from what you find in Switzerland. And people in the watchmaking world are passionate about watches. So they're very happy that we bring some fresh air to a world that would be otherwise dominated by Swiss watches.